Welcome to episode 195 of the Microsoft Cloud IT Pro Podcast, recorded live September 11th, 2020. This is a show about Microsoft 365 and Azure from the perspective of IT pros and end users, where we discuss a recent topic or news and how it relates to you. In this episode, we push all the buttons, Microsoft Teams buttons, that is, as we talk about the new conversation button that's now rolling out in Microsoft Teams and just general concepts and best practices around carrying on conversations within Microsoft Teams. So the new conversation button is rolling out. People are starting to see it. And tell me, Scott, does it work? Does it help?
It's interesting. the UI is, like, in my mind, 100% improved. That's all good and ready to go.
Yep.
But I've noticed in practical usage that it doesn't seem to be helping a whole lot. I don't know if it's maybe a lost in translation thing when you put a button in front of somebody and then they think, okay, well, now there's a button there, so I have to click that versus a text box. Or maybe now there's a general confusion around a text field for a reply versus a new conversation opening up another text field. And was that a reply, or, you know, just what's going on with the whole thing? It's very strange.
Do you feel overwhelmed by trying to manage your Office 365 environment? Are you facing unexpected issues that disrupt your company's productivity? IntelliJink is here to help, much like you take your car to the mechanic that has specialized knowledge on how to best keep your car running. IntelliJink helps you with your Microsoft Cloud environment because that's their expertise. IntelliJink keeps up with the latest updates in the Microsoft Cloud to help keep your business running smoothly and ahead of the curve. Whether you are a small organization with just a few users up to an organization of several thousand employees, they want to partner with you to implement and administer your Microsoft Cloud technology. Visit them at IntelliJink.com/podcast. That's IntelliJink.com/podcast for more information or to schedule a 30-minute call to get started with them today. Remember, IntelliJink focuses on the Microsoft Cloud so you can focus on your business.
So do you think it's more of a user education thing? Like, do people legitimately just not know? They see a button, they think new conversation, and they think, I'm in a conversation, I want to continue my conversation. Is it that people just don't have the concept in chat yet of that there's a difference between a reply and a new conversation? Like, there's a difference in Outlook between a reply and a new email? Is it that? Because, I mean, for a long time, like text messaging and even iMessage and all of that, in the course of a conversation, you don't have a concept of a reply to a message and a new conversation. There's literally just conversations.
It's just the stream. So I understand that, you know, we're humans and that's the way we think. But I also fall into that bucket of, if you give me a new conversation and a reply button, you know, I'm going to go figure out what those things are and try and use the right one.
Right.
There's a little bit of that. I think the other thing is, like, why do those buttons exist, or why are those fields differentiated? So one is for search, to make it easier to group and co-locate that information and bring it together. One certainly for UI, you know, let's roll all these things up in the same place and be able to expand and collapse them. And,
right.
And that's all good. But I'd argue that one's almost not as important, right? Because you're right. People are used to SMS and text messages and Twitters and all the other things. iMessage, where, you know, they haven't had this native, like, multi-level reply mechanism. The third, and probably the most important for a lot of organizations that leverage Microsoft Teams, being that it's in that Microsoft 365 ecosystem, is compliance. So you want to be able to do things like archive chats or individual threads, or be able to do that search, not just from a user perspective, but from an e-discoveries perspective against those components and what exists out there. And when you break the thread, you really, like, outside of the user experience, you break the ability or you make it that much more difficult for e-discovery and compliance to come together in the way that it's sold to customers, right?
Right.
In the way that it's presented. And I think that's probably the hardest thing to do. And I don't know how you get around that. You could do buttons and text boxes and, you know, scrolling marquees all day. And I don't know, like, you're putting so much of a burden on a user at that point to understand maybe things about the business they shouldn't, or the regulatory landscape of your business or other things like that. So it's a weird one.
Yeah. I agree. I think the other reason for it, and this is what I've found, is you notice that you don't have the reply and the new message in a one-to-one chat. It's just a new message. I wonder if that's confusing users, but part of the difference there is in a one-to-one chat, you aren't trying to keep track of who's responding to what message, where for me, the whole reply to is to keep conversation streams from crossing. Because I even have it in group iMessages. I'm in a few group iMessage conversations with my family, and there's like 10 of us in there. And even in that, every once in a while, it's like, wait a minute, who are you responding to, or which question were you responding to? It happens in iMessage. And that's, to me, that's the biggest reason for the reply versus the new message is teams. I mean, you start getting these 100, 200, 5,000 person teams, you need to use the reply in order to keep the messages in the right spot in terms of knowing who's replying to what.
Yeah, that whole chat versus group message thing, it does get very blurry. So I don't actually have a lot of one-to-one conversations in Teams. I have one-to-many conversations, but those take place in two different mediums. They take place inside of groups or Teams, right? Yeah. Where you do have that new conversation button and you do have the concept of threaded replies. But arguably, the most important ones and the ones that I really want to be able to search on happen in one-to-many chats over just in chat, where then you run into the same issue. Like, you can't find them, they're unsearchable. I'm always trying to save threads or individual conversations. I've got a OneNote with links out. Like, when somebody puts, you know, that one reply that I really want to save for later, I've got a separate bookmarking system just to remember it so that I can get out there and find it again.
You're supposed to use the save message in Teams, Scott.
I can do that, but now I have so many saved messages that I can't search any of those. So it's nigh upon useless to me, right? I needed an index of the index of the index to make those things work, because we have transitioned so much of that context outside of email, where things like searching an email, like if I go to an Outlook, whether it's on the desktop or on the web, and I search for something, I understand the inputs that need to be in that search box to get me the right result based on who I email and the way I send messages and how they reply to me. You can't do those same things in Teams. Like, it's powerful, but it kind of like isn't.
Right. Well, to me, even in Teams, like if you're not going to do a reply under a conversation, or if you're going to reply under the wrong conversation, it's kind of like switching topics in an email thread, where now the subject of the email no longer relates to what the conversation is actually about. Because people used to get mad at that all the time, like doing the whole context switching on a email thread, or putting unrelated questions in an email, and then you can't find it because you're looking at the subject and all of a sudden realize the conversation happened in a completely different subject than the email was intended to be about.
It's rough.
So just speculating, do you think, you hate to just keep adding buttons, do you think two buttons would help? Like, right now there's a text box and a button, and I can see where people's inclination, well, I don't know, I would think their inclination would actually be to reply in the text box. But if you clearly had two buttons, kind of like you do in Outlook, reply to a conversation and start a new conversation, if that would just trigger something in people's heads, where they're used to seeing new email and reply to email. Now you have two buttons, reply to conversation, new conversation.
I don't know what's necessarily going through somebody's head, right? Like you can't necessarily speculate on how different people are right, going to view that and what it looks like. From a consistency perspective, now having a text box and a button is a little inconsistent, where before you had two text boxes. So I can see the argument to say, hey, let's potentially go to two buttons and keep the same hotkeys and everything else that you have to be able to navigate in there. Because, you know, you come back and you'd say, oh, great, Scott, you added an extra click. Well, no, I didn't, because you still had to click into the reply box anyway to make sure you were in the right one for the right conversation to get that to where it needed to be. It might help in some of the context, like a lot of the ones that I see, at least kind of anecdotally, where people are using new conversations instead of threading replies is particularly in cross-tenant conversations or where I'm in groups with guests, where my inclination and my first thought would be, oh, they're using the new conversation button every time they come in because they're not in my tenant all the time.
Got it.
So really, when they come over to my tenant and they see something and they want to reply to it, it's brand new to them. They're like, oh, new conversation. And maybe they do hit that button and go through it because they don't have that, you know, let's take a deep breath. And they don't have that stopping point to say, like, which one should I click like you do in an email? Should I reply? Should I forward? Like, what's the action that I want to take here on this thing to get it to where it needs to be?
Yeah.
And get it the right visibility that it needs.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I'm curious to get at my tenant. I don't use it a ton because I don't have a lot of conversations with myself and my tenant. But, or as I take part in other tenants that I'm in to have those conversations, it'll be interesting to me to see if it helps or if I notice any difference with people I have conversations with.
Yeah. I'd be interested to hear your thoughts on it. See if your experience is potentially any different than what I've seen so far.
Yeah.
Outlook add-ins are a great way to improve productivity and save time in the workplace, and Sperry Software has all the add-ins you'll ever need. The Save as PDF add-in is a bestseller and is great for project backups, legal discovery, and more. This add-in saves the email and attachments as PDF files. It's easy to download, easy to install, and Sperry Software's unparalleled customer service is always ready to help. Download a free trial at sperrysoftware.com, SperrySoftware.com, and see for yourself how great Save as PDF is. Listeners can get 20% off their order today by entering the code CLOUDIT. That's CLOUDIT, CLOUDIT, all one word at checkout. Sperry Software, work in email, not on email.
One thing you mentioned too was hotkeys. I don't know how many people know about this. There's a lot of hotkeys in Teams, and Microsoft has them very well documented. Like, I've looked at the sheet, but I can never remember them. I'm always learning about new ones. Those, I think, can also really help. If people start getting in the habit of, I'm going to reply, use this hotkey. I'm going to start a new conversation, use this hotkey. So we can link those in the show notes, but they're also available right in Teams, like within the help, I think. If you click the your icon, your person, and then there's a link right in that menu for keyboard shortcuts. If you haven't looked at those, go check those out too for Teams.
So one of the other things you can do is there is a keyboard shortcut for showing the keyboard shortcuts, because it's a very meta thing. That's just command and period. If you're on a Mac, you know, this support article is wonderful. Let's see,
probably
what is it on Windows? Control period. Yep. To make those come up and kind of see what you got going. I think, like, there's a couple, like you said, being able to hop in and reply to a message, things like that. Honestly, I recommend everybody take a look at the keyboard shortcuts that are useful during meetings and calls. So things like being able to toggle mute and toggle video on or off are good ones to have. And get those in there. Like, I'm using the mute one all the time.
Yeah, and I always forget about those, because how often are you on a phone call and you hear, oh, wait a minute, I'm looking for my mute button, or I can't find the mute button, or any of that?
Yeah. Yeah, I have a hardware mute button on my headset, but I always forget where it is. And, you know, there's three buttons on one side, and they're all covered in rubber, so you're trying to figure out which one, and it's like, my keyboard's right in front of me. Let me just go ahead and click this, because I lose the Teams windows now all the time that they're in pop-outs. You know, I end up, like, somebody says something, so I'm over in OneNote, or I'm in a web browser trying to look up a reference to something else, and I come back, and where do Teams go? Well, as long as I can just click it really quick, like down in the taskbar or the dock, then I can do the hotkey and mute and everything's okay.
At least get that application to the foreground somewhere so the hotkey works.
Yep.
Yes. Did you also see the NFL is using Teams for cheering? to let fans cheer along with players when they score a touchdown?
Yes.
You could be one of 30 lucky fans sitting in the end zone on a screen and giving your player, your favorite player, a virtual high five.
It's kind of cool to see some of that stuff and how it's come out. So there's the partnership now with the NFL. There was the and is the NBA stuff that's using theater mode, which, you know, theater mode in and of itself, like during meetings, kind of campy. It makes your fan run on any desktop or laptop or anything that you're on like crazy. But for sporting events, what a great idea, right? It actually like does come together and do what it needs to do. Because in those times, like you want to be the fan in the stands that's potentially on TV. So you're encouraged to be in front of your camera and dead center, you know, right where you want to be. So yeah, it's all good.
Definitely not replacing live, but in light of the current situation, it's a cool use of the technology.
Yep. I mean, the NFL is in a little bit of, in the US, right? American football, they're in a little bit of a different place than things like the NBA because they are allowing fans into the stadiums.
Yeah. So although I think it's only some stadiums. I think it varies stadium to stadium based on the article I was reading that not all stadiums are equal in terms of fans are now no fans.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because now it's a state to state and city to city and county to county kind of thing. So you can get to, you get that true sense for how differentiated America is and how they view things like global pandemics. And
I thought global was my city. You mean global expands beyond just my bubble in my city?
It does.
Oh, who knew?
It does. Yeah. It's going to be a wild ride.
So do you want to jump over to your Kubernetes topic or do you want to talk about RSS feeds? I was going to kick off with that if there were people listening that kind of have been missing a couple episodes in certain podcast players, but I kind of forgot.
Let's talk about RSS because it's an interesting one.
All right.
And people gain some inside baseball for how this stuff actually works.
And some people may not actually even be hearing this episode if all of our podcast platforms have not refreshed yet. So
there is that as well.
Yeah. But if you are listening to this, or if all of a sudden you had like four episodes pop up in Spotify or Pandora or Deezer, I think is working again, a little bit of a backstory. We got a message from a user a couple days ago now that said, hey, what happened? I don't see anything past episode 192 in Spotify. And by that point in time, I think 193 was live. We were working on getting 194 out. And we were like, huh, what happened? And the way all these podcasts get everywhere is we host everything in a service called Blueberry. B-L-U-B-R-R-Y. And then we push it all out through our website, which is actually running on WordPress. And we use the RSS feed that we submit to a bunch of different places. Sometimes Blueberry will do it for us. Sometimes we've had to do it on our own. But really, all these podcast services, Google, Apple, Spotify, Pandora, Deezer, Stitcher, all of those just work off an RSS feed. They're literally like great big RSS readers, but for audio. And something happened with our RSS feed, which, to be fair, these RSS feeds are completely convoluted, which we can talk about a little bit. And some of these podcast services stopped reading our RSS feed. And honestly, I still don't know entirely why. What we ended up doing is we switched to a different RSS feed. So as part of the service we have our podcast on, they also have a podcast mirroring service, which ironically enough reads our RSS feed out of WordPress and just re-renders it. And there's a couple things that get pulled out and changed that we could talk about as well. And then it goes to all these services. So I spent 3 hours the other night trying to figure out, one, what's going on with our RSS feed, which I never did. And then finally, I just started submitting this mirror of our RSS feed to all these different services. And lo and behold, everything has slowly started to come back. And then the other problem is that not all these services even let you update your own RSS feed. There's two or three of them that I could update our own RSS feed. Two or three of them, I had to put in a ticket and they have to go in and do it for us. And then another two or three of them say, put in a permanent redirect from your old RSS feed to your new RSS feed on your website. And we will pick it up at some point in time. It may be 4 days, it may be 6 days, but let us know if you go like a week and a half. And we haven't picked up your changes yet. So as a result, I think I still have three of them that have not picked them up. I have them up here because I keep refreshing. Stitcher, ironically, Scott, has picked up one of our new ones, but it hasn't picked up both of our new ones. It like picked up half of our RSS feed update. Google has not picked up our update yet. iHeartRadio has not picked up our update yet. All the other ones should have up through episode 194. It's a mess.
You know, again, I think there's a couple things you could look at. So why does our RSS feed publish with an e tag and a last modified header? Like, that's stupid. Get rid of that stuff, because if anything's checking for that, then they'll never pull the latest one if there's a bad e tag in there. And there's actually a spec. It's part of the RSS spec, like the iTunes spec. You don't have to submit redirects to all the services. You can put the redirect URL. There's an attribute in the XML that can go directly in the RSS. I don't know if we could inject it into ours because of the way it's published out of WordPress and things
yeah,
like that.
But
there is a redirect. So what you end up doing, because I've moved like RSS URLs like that in the past. You can use an attribute in the XML, you point it there, you just leave it there arbitrarily for like 2 to 3 weeks, and then you take it out, because by then all the other services have caught up with it and they point to the new place. So my hunch would be that pointing to the mirror didn't actually fix it. The mirror just doesn't have the e tag in the header. So it's seeing it as new stuff the way it should be.
Instead of?
Yes.
And then the weird thing is, why is that e-tag showing up all of a sudden, or what happened? Because, frankly, we didn't change anything on our website unless there was...
Oh, sure you did. You upgraded a WordPress plugin.
I upgraded a WordPress plugin. That was probably it. There's probably a WordPress plugin that's jacking with our RSS feed and causing all of these problems.
Yeah. Well, anyway... Podcasting, not as much fun as they tell you it is.
Yes, and the whole RSS feed thing. I'll have to go see what I can do with our XML. That's one disadvantage of being on something like WordPress 2 versus like a self-hosted, hand-built one, is we do end up being a little limited. You fall into what you can do in the UI, and frankly, I don't want to go customize a bunch of PHP just to keep the feed published. That being said, pushing out your own means you have to keep up with all those specs and make sure everything is getting pushed out appropriately and all of the right tags are in your RSS feed and all the XML is formatted properly. So there are a lot of things to consider when you start looking at how all of this stuff gets published out.
I don't recommend anybody ever do their podcast RSS feeds by hand. I did that with my first one a long time ago and it was painful. But... had full control over everything.
Yes. So if anybody wants to work on this and wants a challenge to figure out what WordPress is doing to our RSS feed, let us know. We will happily give you a challenge to work on.
Well, I can tell you what WordPress is doing to the RSS feed.
Okay, how to fix
just
what
why
is
it's doing it. That's a different question. Yes. It is injecting an e tag and a last modified attribute into the header. So if you do a head request against our RSS feed, you will see it, the actual feed that's coming out of directly out of PowerPress or whatever that is. You will see a version of it that is older than it should be, because that's what it's rendering. I don't know.
I don't know either. Although the feed validator doesn't say that that's a problem. It says it's there.
Because the feed validator is not checking.
It's not looking for something that's just completely bizarre.
So a validation engine, like a linter or anything else, it's going to tell you the things that are wrong. The attribute being there
isn't wrong.
Is in and of itself not a wrong thing, right? Like, you can totally do that. But the services that consume it, if they're doing a head request and, you know, they don't want to pull your whole feed unless they have to. So yep. I think our feed is, it's over a megabyte now. So if you have all these services checking every 2 minutes, 24 hours a day, that's a ton of bandwidth for you as, you know, a hoster, because it's in your WordPress instance. And it's a lot of burden for those providers as well. So if they can treat it more like CDN content, like, do I need to reach out to this item? Is there a newer version of it? If yes, then I'll go pull it. If no, then let's stop here. Because a head request is nothing. You know, it's a couple bytes.
Yep. Which is another thing we looked at too, because that's another aspect that comes into all of this, is certain companies, if your RSS feed starts getting too big, they don't want to pull it. So you have to start limiting how many episodes you're returning or do other things to make sure that that RSS feed stays small enough that they will actually pull it in and publish anything new. And that is one thing we checked as a part of this, and it appears that was not the issue.
Yeah, you gotta gotta turn on the gzip compression, and
we could blame it
on
Cloudflare too. That's the other difference. Going through the mirror, we pulled Cloudflare out of sitting in front of our site. Maybe they were doing some goofy caching or not refreshing the cache as well. But now going through this RSS mirror, we bypass Cloudflare, and I could try to turn Cloudflare off. But to be fair, there's a lot of stuff going on with Cloudflare that introduced a whole nother set of issues with the site. So I couldn't really just like remove Cloudflare and bypass it. Thus, the mirror. And here we are today, with hopefully everything being back to normal shortly.
It'll all get there.
As IT professionals in the cloud era, sometimes it feels like we don't speak the same language as the rest of the organization. So when stakeholders from finance or other departments start asking about a specific project or team's Azure costs, they don't always realize how much work is involved in obtaining that information, sifting through cluttered CSVs and a complex mess of metadata in order to manually create custom views and reports. It's a real headache. On top of helping you understand and reduce your organization's overall Azure spend, ShareGate Overcast lets you group resources into meaningful cost hubs and map them to real-world business scenarios. This way, you can track costs in the way that makes most sense with your corporate structure, whether it's by product, business unit, team, or otherwise. It's a flexible, intuitive, and business-friendly way of tracking Azure infrastructure costs, and it's only available in ShareGate Overcast. Find out more on ShareGate.com/ITPro.
So how about we do this? So we got a couple of minutes left. Speaking of RSS, there's an event coming up from Microsoft called Microsoft Ignite.
Really?
Have you heard it? Yeah. Have you heard of that?
Seems like that rings a bell somewhere. What are we going to ignite? Do we ignite anything at Ignite?
I don't even know. I don't have a joke for that one. It's late 2020. Nothing is fun anymore.
Everybody's computers are going to ignite because of the processing, all the streaming video. I don't know.
Well,
I'm tired.
In the spirit of RSS, I think I have recommended in the past that if you work with Azure or you work with Microsoft 365, things like that, there are streams of updates that come out for those that you can follow through RSS and put them in your favorite RSS reader of choice. One of the things that's happened, especially over in Azure land, I haven't been following it so much on the Microsoft 365 side, but typically you would expect a lot of services that have been in preview or haven't been announced yet to come out of preview and hit general availability or be announced all up at Ignite, right? It's the next conference and we're kind of between conferences and it'd be the place to do it. There's actually a lot of services that are GAing right now in the lead up to Ignite, which makes me kind of excited because if all this stuff is coming out now, then there's got to be a bunch of new announcements at Ignite to kind of like fill in behind that and get things to where they need to be. So I work in storage. I'm over in the storage product group for Azure. So object storage, blobs, ADLS Gen 2, all that kind of stuff.
Yep.
So like this week, we GA'd a bunch of features at once. Now, some had interdependencies on each other and they all kind of had to GA at the same time. But in the spirit of we're doing this all before Ignite, like they're out there and available today and ready to go. So like, you know, 2 days ago, we pumped out object replication, change feed, and blob index. And we're not the only service to do that. There's other services out there that are doing the same thing. So I would highly recommend if you're kind of looking at Ignite and you're looking towards maybe services to GA or things to take out a little bit early up into the lead up to it, go check out things like the Microsoft 365 roadmap or the Azure updates feed. Maybe go search through it for the services, or, you know, you can browse by category in there if you want. So like, show me all the things in, say, computer containers or databases or whatever it happens to be, and see if there's been anything that's come out that could potentially kind of help you in your journey here and give you some more focus as you're potentially going into Ignite Ignite. There's a crazy number of sessions in the session catalog right now. I don't know if you've been in the catalog and looked yet.
I have not had a chance to look, which a crazy amount is nuts considering it's only 48 hours of conference.
So I saw one of the team's PMs out there, and she was saying that if you just go search for Microsoft Teams in the scheduler, there's 375 sessions that'll come back.
Wow.
In some way, shape, or form. So you're potentially looking at thousands of sessions to sift through. Like, it is going to be a little bit of an information overload. But if you have some time between now and when Ignite starts, that gives you the opportunity to go build out your schedule. You know, you might not be able to watch those things in real time, but they are streamed and recorded. You know, for the most part, other than maybe some community sessions or things like that, will probably should be available later. And you can go build all that out today.
Yeah, I see. I just pulled it up and it looks like there's 677 sessions. Although I'm not signed in right now, and they do have a filter for space available, that doesn't change it. Because there are like some round table, we talked about them in one of our shows, like some round table discussion type sessions. I'm assuming those are going to have limited space because those are like video, get on a phone call, sit down and chat with people. So I'm guessing those will also fill up rather quickly as they become available. And this will be like Ignite starts on the 22nd. So a little bit, it's the 11th. We're recording on the 11th. This will come out on the 18th, 17th. So 5 days from now, when you're listening to this, assuming you listen to it on release day, is when Ignite starts.
Yes. I just encourage everybody to go out there and take a look if you are signed up for it, or just go register for it.
Right. It's free. It's free. Right? There's no reason not to go.
Yeah. You'll have access to the streams and things later if you need them.
Yep. Absolutely. Which this is going to be kind of interesting for me because I am going to Branson for Mark Rackley's North American Collaboration Summit, which is the week after Ignite. So who knows? I may scramble and switch up some of my sessions based on Ignite stuff. We'll just have to kind of see what's coming. Two conferences back to back. It'll be a busy couple weeks.
Lucky you. I'm going to be sitting here at my computer.
All right. Sounds good. Enjoy sitting there at your computer.
All right. Thanks, Ben.
I'm going to mask up and practice social distancing and stay safe. But yes, go enjoy your weekend, Scott. And we'll talk to you again next week.
All right. Thanks, Ben.
Yep. Thanks, Scott.
If you enjoyed the podcast, go leave us a 5-star rating in iTunes. It helps to get the word out so more IT pros can learn about Office 365 and Azure. If you have any questions you want us to address on the show or feedback about the show, feel free to reach out via our website, Twitter, or Facebook. Thanks again for listening and have a great day.